What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. NFL free agency is just around the corner. We already have some big free agency news. Russell Wilson got released by the Denver Broncos. They are taking the largest dead cap hit in NFL history at $85 million. We're going to be talking about what's next for the Denver Broncos at quarterback. How are they going to go about addressing that position? Are they going to try to find his replacement in the draft, free agency? The Pittsburgh Steelers are another team that has an interesting quarterback situation. You know, what are they going to do with Kenny Pickett? Are they going to give Kenny Pickett another year to prove himself? Are they going to bring in veteran competition? Some reports out there say that they don't have a lot of interest in guys like Justin Fields, Baker Mayfield, or Kirk Cousins. And I'm putting my credibility on the line, all right? I'm going to be ranking all of the top 10 best quarterbacks in this upcoming year's draft from 10 to number 1. And we're going to look back on these rankings that I released tonight in the next couple of years. And we're going to figure out just how good am I at evaluating quarterbacks coming into the draft? And then I got some predictions for where the top free agent running backs are going to land. Saquon, Tony Pollard, DeAndre Swift, Derrick Henry. And then I got some thoughts about college football. Arch Manning opted out of the new upcoming college football video game. And is Ole Miss overhyped or a true contender this year? Before we begin, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. I appreciate everybody that's tuned in live. Remember that we're not just the podcast. Well, we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast, and you can find us on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. After this live stream ends, it will be available in audio format for you guys to listen to on every podcasting platform. So make sure that you guys go ahead, check out the JT Sports Podcast. If you have a question that you would like answered on a future episode, you can send them in the DMs on Instagram at JT Sports _ and on X at JT Sports _. If your question's good, we will answer it on the potential episode. So go ahead and send your questions there. And one word from our partner, Mint Mobile, before we start. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner, Mint Mobile, has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get premium wireless for only $15 a month. Stop getting upset with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and switch to Mint Mobile today. All right, guys, so it's that time of the year for me to put my credibility on the line as a draft analyst. I'm going to be ranking the top 10 best quarterbacks in the upcoming 2024 NFL draft. And we're either going to look back on these rankings in 4 or 5 years, and I'm either going to look like a genius or a flaming idiot. I'm hoping that I look like a genius. I'm pretty confident in my evaluations of these quarterbacks this year. We're starting off with Jordan Travis from Florida State. He comes in at number 10. He has improved a lot over his last couple of years at Florida State. There used to be a point when he first started out for the Noles when he came in sparingly as a Wildcat quarterback. And every time he came in early in his career, you always knew he was going to run the football. He wasn't really a threat at all with his arm. But over the last 2 years, he has really come along really impressively as a passer. He also is a really good leader, hard worker. The players love him. And I just think with that injury that he suffered, it was a really big hindrance to Jordan Travis being able to further improve his draft stock. Because before that injury, I had him graded as a 6-7 rounder. And now after the injury, I don't even know if he's even going to get drafted. But just because he may go undrafted doesn't still mean he can't have a good career. I think he can come in, be a solid backup. Maybe he can come be somewhat of a gadget guy, use him a little bit as a receiver or decoy in certain formations. But overall, he has the potential to be a pretty decent backup in the league. He can extend plays. He's a really good athlete. Outside of Jaden Daniels, he's the best quarterback in this class with the ball in his hands when he decides to tuck and run. And if he improves in the NFL as a quarterback inside of the pocket, his accuracy improves also. He gets better at throwing with better timing and anticipation. This is one of these late round gems who you potentially could find if you're a team that's in search of a reliable backup who gives you a little bit of wow and flavor when it comes to dual threat ability. Joe Milton comes in at number 9 for me. He lit up the NFL Combine. A lot of people were really impressed with how well Joe Milton threw the football. And everybody knows that Joe Milton has one of the strongest arms in the history of football. All right, it doesn't even matter if he gets drafted or goes undrafted. As soon as he officially is a member of the NFL, he's going to have the strongest arm in the league. The question is, can he carve out a career where he could potentially be one of the best quarterbacks in the league? Because that's his upside. You talk about boom or bust prospects, it doesn't get any more boom or bust than Joe Milton. If this guy can go to the right team with the right head coach, let's say Sean McVay or the Rams, and he can help Joe Milton improve his mechanics, get better at throwing the ball with accuracy and anticipation, with how good of an athlete he is. He's not Anthony Richardson, but he does have pretty good size. He's 6'5", 235 pounds, and he has enough athleticism that you can utilize him on design quarterback runs, read options, QB sneaks, tush pushes if you want to utilize him in that direction. Joe Milton, the problem with him is that he's a big project. The footwork isn't great. His mechanics aren't great. You're pretty much trying to rebuild this dude from the ground up. But with how gifted of an arm this dude has and how great of an arm talent he is, if you're a guy who's a really confident offensive-minded coach, you look at Joe Milton with all these physical tools and you say, you know, we bring him in for 3-4 years and maybe we can have a decent starting quarterback on our hands. And then once he becomes a starter, he can improve and maybe become a top 10 quarterback. Joe Milton, really intriguing quarterback prospect who comes in at number 9 on my top 10 quarterback rankings for 2024. Sam Hartman, I have him at number 8. If you're looking for a quarterback who's really good in structure, really accurate, has a little bit of mobility, Sam Hartman is your guy. My comp for him is Gardner Minshew. Really scrappy. He has played a lot of years in college football, so you're getting somebody who, yeah, he's up there in age, but he's also really experienced. He knows how to run a pro-style offense because Notre Dame runs somewhat of a NFL-style offense. So the transition from college football to the NFL shouldn't be that difficult for Sam Hartman. What is going to make the transition for Sam Hartman a little bit difficult and why he projects as a low-end starter, maybe a high-end backup at the NFL level, is that he doesn't have a good arm. He can't really throw the football in tight windows. He doesn't really throw a great deep ball. His deep balls look a little wobbly. But in terms of looking for a really good starting quarterback, well, a good backup quarterback, Sam Hartman definitely fits the mold of that. And if you're looking for somebody who maybe could be a low-end starter potentially, Sam Hartman, if you can groom him for maybe 2 years, he could become that for you. But I don't see him any more better than that. A guy who, if he reaches his ceiling, he can start a few games for you. Maybe he can be a bridge quarterback until you can find a better successor. Sam Hartman, I really liked watching him at Wake Forest when he went to Notre Dame last year. The expectations for him were pretty high, and I'm not going to say he disappointed, but you just expected a little bit more for somebody who has had all these years starting in college football for his final season to be a little bit more impressive statistically. But he's a solid quarterback prospect, and I have him at number 8. J.J. McCarthy is in at number 7. Now, the J.J. McCarthy arguments are really interesting because fans are not high on this dude at all. Many of us believe that he's not good, he's very raw, he's very toolsy, and he should have went back to Michigan for another season. The NFL world, the scouts, general managers, front office executives, though, they have way different opinions from what the media and fans have. NFL executives feel like J.J. McCarthy is good enough to be a potential top 10, top 15 pick. And you definitely can understand why. He has really good athleticism, very good size, and a very good arm. And he had the second strongest velocity behind Joe Milton when he threw the ball 61 miles per hour. Joe Milton threw the ball 41 miles per hour. Well, 61 miles per hour, excuse me. The thing with J.J. McCarthy is that with him being so raw, you wonder if you can put him in the right system and he can land with the right head coach who can help him in his development, because he definitely isn't a day one starter. He definitely has to sit a year or two. And then if you give him the right pieces around him with the right scheme, I definitely can see him becoming a really good quarterback. I don't see him becoming an elite quarterback. I don't really see that kind of skill set. I see somebody who's good enough to be a good game manager, a high-end game manager at that. He can lead you to the playoffs. Maybe you win a playoff game or two with him. But I don't see anything from J.J. McCarthy from a potential standpoint that screams to me, oh, he can become one of the best quarterbacks in the league. His floor is really low. Potentially, he could be not even good enough to be a starter. He could be a backup. That's how low his floor is. His ceiling, though, top 12, top 11 quarterback, high-end game manager. J.J. McCarthy comes in at number 7. At number 6, I have Michael Penix Jr. He started his college career at Indiana. He had several season-ending injuries. He transfers to Washington. He's been healthy for the last 2 years, no injury concerns. But when you think about all of the injuries that Michael Penix has suffered, he definitely isn't the same athlete now that he once was when he started out at Indiana. So he's really limited in terms of what you can do with him. You won't really be able to get creative with him in the run game. He has a little bit of mobility, but at the NFL level, probably not enough where defenses have to account for it. And he's more so of a bigger, stronger version of Tua Tagovailoa. I think that he can perform really well in the offense that's predicated on timing and structure. He does that pretty well. He throws one of the best deep balls out of all the quarterbacks in this class. The thing that kind of makes me a little bit concerned about Michael Penix is that he plays a little bit unorthodox in a sense. And what I mean by that is, it's really weird watching him play. Sometimes he doesn't look comfortable when he's under a lot of pressure. Go back to that game against Michigan. But when he's operating out of a clean pocket, he's like poetry in motion. And people don't like his footwork and his mechanics. But anytime you look at a left-handed quarterback, it's always weird just looking at how they go about their process of throwing the football. And I really don't have too much of a big issue about Michael Penix's mechanics. My problem with him is, at the NFL level, is he going to be able to go through his progressions? Is he going to get better at taking what the defense gives him? But I really would like him with Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos. That would be a match made in heaven. I definitely think that Michael Penix is what Sean Payton would be looking for in a quarterback. I don't know if you would invest a first-round selection in Michael Penix, Many people believe that he's a lock for the first round. I don't really believe that, just with the durability concerns. Yes, you can sell teams on the fact that he has been healthy for two straight years, but nobody's going to overlook several season-ending injuries that you sustain back to back to back. You feel me? So it's just from a risk standpoint, if you're going to invest the first round pick into a quarterback, you rather take J.J. McCarthy in the first round than Michael Penix, only because of the durability concerns, because first round selections are a really big investment. And you definitely don't want to risk that high of an investment on somebody who you don't really know is going to be able to be dependable for you. But Michael Penix upside, I don't think he'll be a high-end elite quarterback, but he can definitely be like a top eight quarterback, a Pro Bowler caliber QB that can win you a few games in the playoffs, maybe win you a Super Bowl if you give him a great team. So I got Michael Penix in that Michael at number six. Number five, Bo Nix. Bo Nix had one of the biggest turnarounds in the history of college football. He was not good at Auburn. He had a subpar career. Then he goes to Oregon, and he absolutely just has a, I don't even know how to describe it, bro. It's just, he went from becoming an average quarterback to the best quarterback in Oregon football history. He was dynamic. He was like out throwing the football downfield. He was one of college football's most accurate quarterbacks. The thing with Bo Nix is that how much of that was a testament to how good of the talent he had around him, and how much of that also was a testament to how good of the play calling he was able to get. Because Bo Nix, you know, in the NFL, many people view him as a more athletic, stronger version of Johnny Manziel, and maybe he could be what we all thought Johnny Manziel would be in the National Football League, at least those who were fans of him. Bo Nix, he's able to improvise. He gets outside the pocket. He can buy time for guys to get open. He's a really good runner. That's something that I don't think gets talked about him enough. If you're looking at a quarterback who you can utilize as part of your run game on QB powers, read options, zone reads, you definitely can utilize Bo Nix in that way. Another thing that I like about Bo Nix is that he's really accurate in the short intermediate passing game. If you want to operate a quick passing offense, Bo Nix, he definitely is somebody that loves dumping the ball out to his running backs. He definitely loves taking what the defense gives him. He doesn't really put the ball in harm's way. Going back to his time at Oregon, there weren't too many throws I've seen Bo Nix made that were boneheaded decisions. If he threw an interception, maybe he misjudged. You know, if a wide receiver was open, maybe he just threw the ball just a tad bit too late. But I really like Bo Nix. If he was to get drafted in the first round, I wouldn't be upset with it, even though I view him more as a second round pick, because his upside, I don't think is that high enough to warrant him being the first round pick. I definitely do think that right now he could come in and maybe in the year be a top 15 QB and at best be a top 10 quarterback. But I just don't really see elite superstar top five level ceiling out of a guy like Bo Nix. And his floor, I think he could be as bad as Kenny Pickett. That's how bad Bo Nix can be. I saw that Washington game, and it was really rocky, especially in the Pac-12 championship. The second time they faced off against each other, he had a really slow start to that game. There were a lot of balls being thrown in the dirt. I don't know just how truly accurate he is throwing the football downfield. A lot of Oregon's offense was predicated off short passes. But if you can get him outside the pocket, you get him going with play action rollouts, bootlegs, I really think that's how you can get Bo Nix comfortable, and that's how you can get the best out of him. And that's when he was at his best, at least in my opinion, when he was playing for Oregon. So he comes in at number five. Number four is Spencer Rattler. I know a lot of you guys are probably going to get riled up about this. You're going to disagree with this. But Spencer Rattler, a few years ago, going into his second season at Oklahoma, was arguably projected to be either the second or first overall pick in the draft a few years back. Now, his time at Oklahoma, year two, didn't end on a high note. He got benched for Caleb Williams, but he goes to South Carolina, and he improved. South Carolina just didn't have a lot of talent around them. You know, like, they had a few wide receivers, but they struggled to stay healthy. And the offensive line was always a travesty. Every single year, Spencer Rattler was underneath center. But when you look at what Spencer Rattler did well this past season for South Carolina, when he had time to throw the football, he threw a really nice deep ball. And I do think that he has pretty good accuracy. The problem with it is that his accuracy can be hit or miss, and he can be a little bit all over the place. He has a really rambunctious playing style where it's just chaos at times, and you want him to be more controlled in the NFL. Can he be a little bit more structured with his playing style? Because there are times when he just tries to do a little bit too much and it gets him in trouble. And there are times when he just doesn't have the right footwork. He just gets a little bit off balance with just a little bit of pressure in his face. He's not really one of the best quarterbacks at handling pressure. And he's not a great athlete. He ran a 4.95 in the 40-yard dash. Now, he's going to be a lot faster in game. He has faster game speed than that. He's not really one of those burners. He's one of those more shifty quarterbacks that just knows how to make you miss because he's a little nimble. He's a little elusive. Spencer Rattler, though, you look at this upside that he has. He has one of the best arms in this draft. And I read a few scouting reports that said that he didn't have a good arm. Like, that's crazy to me. Spencer Rattler knows how to throw the football from all kinds of different body angles. He has really good arm talent. And arm talent, the difference between that and arm strength is that arm strength is just how far can you throw the football. Arm talent is, can you throw the ball from different body angles? Can you throw the ball from the opposite hash on the right side of the field when you're running towards your left? That's what arm talent is. Spencer Rattler has that. And if he goes to the right team with the right head coach, I really believe that Spencer Rattler could be one of the biggest steals of this draft. You just don't go from being arguably a number one, number two pick, and then all of a sudden you just have no talent at all. The talent definitely is there for Spencer Rattler to be elite quarterback. If he was projected to get drafted that high a few years ago, that means that there were some physical traits that were there that people still see. He isn't the most physically imposing guy, but he's a really good peer thrower of the ball. And he's not one of those guys that you're going to have to invest a lot of money in too early. You're not going to have to throw him out there. You leave him on the bench for a year or two. If you're a team such as the Los Angeles Rams that has a guy like Matthew Stafford that's starting to get a little bit older and you're wondering when he's going to hang it up, Spencer Rattler would be a really good fit. Hell, even the New York Jets, let him learn behind Aaron Rodgers. Spencer Rattler, he's going to be one of the most successful quarterbacks in this draft, in my opinion, just because he's going to have the luxury of not getting drafted to a bad situation like how a lot of these guys are going to get drafted into. So Spencer Rattler comes in at number four for me. Number three, starting out my top three, I have Drake May. Drake May, I am a lot lower on him now post-combine than I was a few months ago, only because the more I watched Drake May, the less I came away impressed. And at the start of this past season, he looked really good. He had a pretty good game against Minnesota, a really nice outing against South Carolina, despite the interceptions. But you look at how he played against Duke and Virginia, those were really tough games to watch. And Drake May is definitely in that boom or bust category because on one end, you see a dude who is able to do everything that Caleb Williams can do. He can extend plays, maybe not to the extent that Caleb Williams can, but he can still buy time for guys to get open. He is also able to throw the ball from different body angles. He has very good arm strength, and he's very tough. And his toughness could cost him in the NFL if he doesn't get a little bit smarter with how he chooses to manage the amount of hits that he takes. Because I call him Baby Josh Allen. Josh Allen plays
like Caution to the Wind, then Drake May plays the same way, but he doesn't have the same frame that Josh Allen has. He's still a big guy, but not as big as what Josh Allen is. He's a little bit more lankier than Josh Allen. Josh Allen's a little bit more, you know, a little bit more, I won't say swoller, but just a little bit more fatter on the bones, if you get what I'm trying to say. So Drake May, having that kind of Josh Allen skill set for a guy of his size, I don't really know if that's going to lead to him having a long career in the National Football League if he doesn't get a little bit smarter with the amount of hits that he takes. Another thing with Drake May is that sometimes, like Caleb Williams, he would try to do a little bit too much instead of taking what the defense gives him. And at UNC, they didn't have great receivers. They also didn't have a good offensive line. It's like nearly every drop back against Virginia and Duke, he was damn near running for his life. If you give him a clean pocket, he has the ability to go through his progressions. But when things aren't going well and things get chaotic up front for him, that's when he just tries to get the ball out fast. And that's when we start seeing a lot of erratic footwork, balls getting put in the dirt when guys are wide open on 5-yard drags and slants. So he's a really erratic player. He has a lot of big splash plays. There was one game that I watched when he threw a 40-yard fadeaway touchdown. There were so many jaw-dropping throws that Drake May made that I definitely understand why people make the argument for him being just as good as Caleb Williams. But with just how inconsistent he is and him being more inconsistent this past year than what Caleb Williams was, Caleb Williams only had 2 bad games. Drake May, the middle portion of 2023, were a lot of rough games for him. And just with Caleb Williams, he's just more controlled. Drake May, this dude is like a spark plug. You just don't know what the hell you're going to get. It's just so chaotic. But he's not as chaotic as Spencer Rattler, which is why I have him above Spencer Rattler. And the ceiling is definitely super high for Drake May. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if Drake May came right out the gate and looked like a top 10 quarterback. He definitely has every arsenal in his toolbox to have one of those kinds of careers that could get him a gold jacket, just like Caleb Williams. And there's not a single throw that Caleb Williams can make that Drake May can't make himself. But it's just that you have a little bit more concerns with Drake May because of the inconsistencies, because of the fact that, you know, he is somebody who has one of those caution to the wrist play styles. Just don't really know how to really project how his career is going to pan out in the NFL. And out of all these QBs who has to go to a great situation, who's going to get drafted in the top 5 or top 10, I think for Drake May, the situation he lands at is going to be so vital to his success in the NFL. Jaden Daniels, I have at number 2. And I might as well reveal number 1, Caleb Williams. Jaden Daniels has improved so much over the last couple of years. And even at Arizona State, when he was a true freshman, there were some mock drafts ahead of time that was saying that he could be a first-round pick potentially. He looks really fantastic running the football. He's getting a lot of comparisons to Lamar Jackson. I understand why, because they both are really elusive. They kind of have like that joystick kind of movement. But I don't think he's as twitchy as what Lamar is. Lamar is one of one. Jaden Daniels is a little bit of a few notches below what Lamar Jackson is as a runner. But that still doesn't mean that he's not going to be an elite run threat in the NFL. He definitely is going to be one of those QBs that can get to over 100 yards per game at an instance. You know, you saw that game against Florida that he had not too long ago last year. The dude ran for over 200 yards. It was a game against Ole Miss when he carried the team. Jaden Daniels was literally carrying LSU. And they didn't have the best offensive line. They had great receivers, but the offensive line was a work in progress. Jaden Daniels, to me, with how improved he is as a thrower from the pocket, he's getting more comfortable moving inside of the pocket, stepping away from pressure, stepping up in the pocket. I definitely think that he's good enough to be a day one starter. It may be a little bit rocky, but he definitely can improve as the year progresses. And a team like the Las Vegas Raiders will be a great fit for him. He already has a lot of chemistry with Antonio Pierce because they were with each other back when Antonio Pierce was on the coaching staff of Herm Edwards when he was at Arizona State and he was still their head coach. So Jaden Daniels, I would love for the Raiders to go ahead and trade up and draft him. He would be a great fit. They've been looking for a franchise quarterback for years. You thought you had that in Derek Carr. He was a really good quarterback, but I wouldn't really consider him a franchise quarterback because he wasn't the kind of quarterback who could win you a Super Bowl. Jaden Daniels is the kind of quarterback that if he reaches his ceiling, he's good enough that potentially he could be going toe-to-toe with a guy like a Josh Allen or Justin Herbert or Patrick Mahomes in his division if he goes to the Raiders. But that's if he reaches his potential. But I don't think that Jaden Daniels' floor is that low. I think his floor is what Justin Fields is right now. And Justin Fields is what? Top 20 quarterback at worst. But his high-end ceiling or his high-end upside for me is going to be Lamar Jackson. You know, Lamar Jackson is a dual-threat quarterback and he can not only run the football at a really high level, but he can throw the football at a really high level. And that's what you could possibly see out of Jaden Daniels. He's also way more of an explosive runner than what Caleb Williams is. Now, Caleb Williams is undisputedly my number one quarterback. Last year, it was 1A, 1B with Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. But the gap between Caleb Williams and everybody else in this draft class, I just think is so large that we really shouldn't be discussing if Caleb Williams has any competition in his draft, because he's one of one. He definitely is a generational quarterback. We're not going to find too many quarterbacks like him that are a refined version of Patrick Mahomes. Drake May, yeah, he has all of the ability to make the same kind of throws and plays that Caleb Williams can make, but he's not as refined as what Caleb Williams is. Caleb Williams doesn't have as many turnovers. He's better at going through reads than what Drake May is. And he's just very smooth. He's a very smooth player. He has a really good understanding of the game, really good instincts, has a really good feel for when the pressure is around him. And he just always seems to know where to go with the football. Every time he's getting outside the pocket, he's just finding guys open. You know, he's a playmaker. He's like prime Russell Wilson mixed in with a little bit of Patrick Mahomes. It's just, he just finds ways to make the impossible throws look fucking possible. That's the best way I can put it. And also, when he runs the ball, he looks a lot like Jalen Hurts, but a little bit more shiftier. Jalen Hurts, he has a really different running style from what Lamar and Jaden Daniels have. Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson are quarterbacks that they get into the open field, they're going to put a couple of moves on you. Jalen Hurts gets into the open field, yeah, he may put a move or two on you, but he's not as agile. Caleb Williams, he's kind of like Jalen Hurts. He's more of a power runner, but he does have a little finesse in his game. And although he may look 6'1 and may not light up the, you know, the department when you look at his weight, but you also look at him on the field and pass, the dude does look pretty built. He does look like he's built like a running back. So even though he may just be a tad bit undersized at 6'1, the dude still is built to be able to sustain enough hits that he can make it through an NFL season without having to worry about his durability. He truly is a generational talent. I think that he's been getting way too much hate, and people just have prospect fatigue because there's been so many high expectations placed upon Caleb Williams, and this is just what you expect when you see a quarterback with this kind of hype. But I definitely believe that he should live up to the billing. He definitely can handle the expectations, and I'm ready to see what he does in the NFL. But these are my top 10 quarterbacks in the 2024 NFL draft. Leave your comments and opinions down in the comment section down below. I know a lot of you guys are probably going to disagree with me, but we're going to see if I'm right 3 to 4 years from now or if I'm wrong. Before we move on, leave a like, subscribe if you haven't already. Shout out to everybody in the comment section. I am Danny716 says Sam Hartman is Baker Mayfield's twin. Ross Mott says, oh, Spencer Rattler, top four, nice. Bills can help Joe Milton to replace Josh Allen in 3 to 4 years. Appreciate everybody that's tuned in the live stream. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we're a podcast. You can find us on Apple and Spotify. If you enjoy and you want to support the pod, give us a 5-star review. We will greatly appreciate it. Share the pod with your friends, family members, and acquaintances. What are the Denver Broncos' plans for addressing the quarterback position after cutting Russell Wilson? And what now is the NFL's biggest dead cap hit in history at $85 million? They don't really have a lot of options out there because your cap situation with what you just did to Russell Wilson isn't going to allow you to get a guy like a Kirk Cousins or a Baker Mayfield because they're going to be asking for a lot of money, money that you're not going to have the ability to give them. So your next best option is you go out there and you get you a Jameis Winston who Sean Payton already has familiarity with. When Jameis Winston started a few games for him, his final season in New Orleans, and he led New Orleans to a 5-1 record. He had a 14-4 touchdown interception ratio that season. And if you pick him up in Denver, he will probably be the best quarterback you could get for a low-end contract because you're not going to bring back Russell Wilson, who probably is going to sign for a veteran minimum. Maybe you look at a guy like Sam Darnold, but with Jameis Winston already having familiarity with Sean Payton's system, it just would make sense for Sean Payton to bring back Jameis Winston to his offense. You do got Jarrett Stidham, and you may ask, well, what makes Jameis Winston better than Jarrett Stidham? Jameis Winston pushes the football downfield, and Jameis Winston is the first-round pick, and that talent still gets showed when he is in the ball game. The problem is he turns the football over way too damn much. But when he's playing under Sean Payton, Sean Payton seems to be the only head coach who has the cheat codes to knowing how to lower Jameis Winston's turnover numbers to get Jameis Winston playing at a more efficient level. So Denver, if you sign Jameis Winston, that doesn't mean you're committing to him long-term to being your quarterback. He's just the best starting caliber QB you can get on the market right now for a low price because you don't have a lot of money to allocate to getting a big name on the market. And there only are two big name QBs right now, which are Baker and Kirk Cousins. And Tampa may bring back Baker and Kirk may go back to Minnesota or even Atlanta, but you're not going to have enough money to get into a bidding war with those teams, which is why Jameis Winston makes sense. In terms of drafting a quarterback in this year's draft, you're picking 12. So unless you plan on finding a way to trade up into the top 10 or top 5, you're possibly not going to be able to draft the Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, or maybe not even Drake May, and definitely not Caleb Williams. So that probably leaves you in contention for either Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy. Bo Nix may be there, but with how much interest the Giants seem to have in taking a quarterback this year, I don't see Bo Nix falling past 10. The Broncos, if they want to get one of the better QBs in this draft, you're going to have to trade into the top 10. And you don't really have the assets to do that. Denver is in a really bad spot this year. Because at 12, you could get Michael Penix, but Michael Penix with the medical concerns, you don't really know if it's worth the risk. Now, if you draft him in the second round or a guy like Spencer Rattler in the second round, that could be a good option for you. Or if you take J.J. McCarthy 12th overall, because he definitely could be there. I don't see him getting drafted in the top 10, but with how much praise he's getting from front office executives and NFL scouts, I don't really think it's a question that he pretty much could be viewed as a lock for the first round. And since he comes from an NFL offense that Jim Harbaugh ran at Michigan, the Denver Broncos, you're going to be getting a quarterback that, yeah, he can sit for a year, but it's not like he's going to have to wait 2-3 years and it's going to take so much time for him to be ready to take over the mantle as QB1 because I don't really think he's as raw as what everybody makes him out to be. He only needs one more year of college. He's not going to get that, so that just means he can make up for that by sitting on the bench. And you remember what people said about Anthony Richardson last year. People said around this time that Anthony Richardson was super raw and he wanted to be day one material, and look how fast he developed. He was starting week one, opening weekend. We can see the same story maybe with J.J. McCarthy going to a guy like Sean Payton. Sean Payton is one of the best offensive minds in NFL history. And let's knock off this nonsense trying to make it seem like Drew Brees carries Sean Payton. Do you guys do know that Sean Payton has a winning record without Drew Brees being a starter, right? Before Sean Payton arrived in Denver, Russell Wilson was garbage. Sean Payton came back and made that dude look somewhat serviceable. And everybody's trying to make it seem like Russell Wilson was the hero in this situation. No, he wasn't the problem, but I don't think he was part of the solution either, which is why they were willing to take an $85 million dead cap hit, the largest in NFL history, to get rid of him. Sean Payton is a great offensive mind. His final season in New Orleans, he had Jameis Winston cooking. I'm not really worried about who he decides to draft. If there was any coach that I would trust to develop J.J. McCarthy into a good or elite quarterback in this league, it would be Sean Payton and maybe a handful of other coaches. You're in good hands with Sean Payton. Like, stop buying into this media sob story that people want to give for Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, and he didn't play up to that. He was getting just as much money on a yearly basis as Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and all of the other top quarterbacks in the league. And he never looked like a top quarterback. He only looked as good as what he did because of Sean Payton and the system that he was able to build around what Russell Wilson was still able to do effectively at this stage of his career, which isn't that much. And another possibility that I know a lot of you people are probably not going to like, but I definitely could see happening, maybe Denver doesn't get a quarterback in this year's draft that they really like that much. You roll with Jameis Winston for this year or another vet, and you just try to put yourself in position to maybe tank for Shedeur Sanders next season. And it makes a lot of sense because he's only right down the street. You're going to be able to watch more Shedeur Sanders this season than anybody else because they're playing in Boulder. And Deion Sanders, you know, like, yeah, there's a lot of high expectations that's going to come from that being his dad. But if there's anybody who I think is built to handle the kind of pressure and attention that's going to come from, you know, his dad being one of the greatest, most notable athletes of all time, it definitely is Shedeur Sanders. And if he was in this year's draft class, I think he undoubtedly would be the second best QB behind Caleb Williams. He's NFL ready right now with just how well he's able to go through his reads, his progressions, and how accurately he throws the football. So I wouldn't be against the Denver Broncos taking for Shedeur Sanders because I rather tank for a quarterback that I know is actually going to hit and actually be able to solve my lingering quarterback issue that I've dealt with ever since Peyton Manning retired, then go ahead and try to swing and miss with a quarterback that I don't really have a lot of interest in and just trying to force myself to get a QB just because I feel like I need to draft a quarterback. If there's not a quarterback that the Broncos really believe can turn into that franchise guy, then they might as well just go ahead and mail it in and try to get Shedeur Sanders next year, because that's more of a safer option at quarterback than just wasting the first round pick on a quarterback this year and you got to reset again next year. It just doesn't make sense. You know, you're not really going to be doing too much anyway with your salary cap situation. So I'm pretty sure you Broncos fans don't expect to make the playoffs next year, especially with how tough the division is going to be. So with the fact that you're in this much of a cap struggle, you might as well just prepare to tank for Shedeur Sanders. You have not been able to address the quarterback position for nearly a decade. Why not just go ahead and tank for a safer option and get in Shedeur Sanders and finally put the rest your quarterback woes and address that situation next year? You know, you just roll with Jameis Winston or a vet for 2024, and then you draft Shedeur Sanders next year. Hopefully you're bad enough. You should be able to. And with Sean Payton, Shedeur Sanders should have the Denver Broncos in a potential situation where they could compete for Super Bowls again. You know, I don't think that's a crazy scenario to throw out there. So this is what I think the Broncos' next moves should be at quarterback, or what I think they possibly could do. And with how bad the quarterback position has been for this team, going from Paxton Lynch to Drew Lock, the Brock Osweilers of the world, them taking for Shedeur Sanders, y'all don't think that wouldn't be a good idea if they can't land any elite quarterback out of this class? The Pittsburgh Steelers, for some reason, they have no interest in any of the top quarterbacks available on the market. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins, and Baker Mayfield, according to reports, the Steelers are out on. And it seems as if they're willing to run it back with Kenny Pickett, and they're willing to give him another year to prove himself. And I really don't understand why. Kenny Pickett doesn't have anything special about him that makes you believe and have confidence that he's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with any of the best quarterbacks in the league, like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, or Joe Burrow and Josh Allen. And I don't understand why so many people get so attached to quarterbacks that are just good enough to win you games in the playoffs and aren't good enough to win you a Super Bowl. We just saw the prime example this past year in the Super Bowl why you need the elite quarterback. Patrick Mahomes carried Kansas City on his back all throughout the playoffs, plus him having a good defense. He had no receivers. The offensive line wasn't good. The only reliable weapons he had was Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce, and yet he outplayed Brock Purdy. Even though Brock Purdy had a more talented team, Brock Purdy wasn't able to lead the 49ers to the win because he wasn't as talented as what Patrick Mahomes was. And Brock Purdy had a really damn good performance in the Super Bowl. Brock Purdy is a really good quarterback. He's a top 10 quarterback right now, but he wasn't Patrick Mahomes. When you have a generational talent at quarterback like a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, it increases your chances of being able to compete for a Super Bowl every single season. It doesn't matter who the Bills or the Chiefs or the Ravens lose in free agency. You want to know why? Because they have a great quarterback. When you have an elite quarterback, he can overcome certain limitations. You don't need to have a complete team to be able to compete for a championship when you have an elite quarterback. We saw Joe Burrow in his second season, coming off a season-ending injury in his rookie season, take Cincinnati to the Super Bowl with a great good group of wide receivers, but when the worst offensive lines to ever make it to the Super Bowl. That's the prime example of what you expect a quarterback that you draft number one overall, who you view as elite, to be able to do. For Kenny Pickett to be good enough to win a Super Bowl for Pittsburgh, not only does he need a great team around him, he needs a great play caller, he needs a great defense, he needs everything. And you're not going to be able to win with a guy like Kenny Pickett. He has no traits about him that stand out, other than he has the ability occasionally to raise his game in the fourth quarter at times. But you have to be able to play a full 60-minute game. Football is not a 15-minute game. It's a game that's four quarters long, 60 minutes. And you don't really get good quarterback play from start to finish out of Kenny Pickett. You can blame Matt Canada's incompetence as a play caller all you want. But what I do know is that let's just not act like Matt Canada was the full reason for the Steelers' offensive struggles. Kenny Pickett was not part of the solution at all. You can't blame Matt Canada's play calling for Kenny Pickett overthrowing wide receivers when they're wide open on 5 and 4 yard slants and drags, and receivers getting frustrated. You want to know why receivers were getting frustrated? Because Kenny Pickett looked terrible. I didn't see George Pickens and Deontay Johnson getting frustrated when Mason Rudolph was throwing passes. You know, the Steelers, as a franchise, have become so delusional about Kenny Pickett being the dude that they're willing to sacrifice everything that this franchise and organization used to be. You want to know what settling for Kenny Pickett is now? Being okay with complacency and mediocrity. Two things that Mike Tomlin always preaches against, the Steelers have seen to become. You're not going to be able to win in the AFC, where the majority of the NFL's best quarterbacks reside, with a guy like Kenny Pickett. That's just the new reality of the NFL. If you want to win, you need an elite quarterback to do so. And Kenny Pickett doesn't have anything that shows he's ever going to become that. Even if Kenny Pickett improves this year, he won't be good enough to win a Super Bowl. JT, how do you know that? We just saw it in this year's Super Bowl. Kenny Pickett at his best is probably Brock Purdy. And Kenny Pickett at his best is not going to be good enough to outduel any of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL in any of the big games in the postseason. We got to stop being okay with just being all right with having a good enough quarterback. Good enough isn't winning anymore, people. Look at the four teams that made it to the conference championship games. And look at the results. The Lions lost to the 49ers. You want to know why? Because Jared Goff was a good enough quarterback to get them there, but there were certain plays that Jared Goff could have made that he was just unable to do. Brock Purdy, same thing once he got to the Super Bowl. Meanwhile, the AFC Championship, you had Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Look who prevailed, the better quarterback. Teams that go the furthest in the playoffs are the teams that have the better quarterback play. Kenny Pickett, there's nothing about him that screams he's a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, even when he reaches his upside, or if he ever reaches his upside. People keep saying, we need to give Kenny Pickett a chance. What more do we need to see out of Kenny Pickett? We know what his ceiling is. It's limited. And we don't even know if Mike Tomlin wants to do who even wanted Kenny Pickett. Hell, he didn't even want Matt Canada. I learned a few weeks ago that Matt Canada was more of the front office decision, more so than it was Mike Tomlin's. They were the ones who ultimately pulled the strings and fired him. I think that Arthur Smith is probably the first hire that Mike Tomlin has made at offensive coordinator, where it was just a decision solely based on him, because the previous OC before Matt Canada, Randy Fichtner, was only put in that position because Big Ben and him got along, and Big Ben didn't get along with the previous OC before Randy Fichtner, which was Ty Haley, who probably was the best offensive coordinator the Steelers have had since Bruce Arians. The Steelers, if the Steelers ever want to get serious again about being a Super Bowl contender and getting back to the standard that used to be, you know, the standard of excellence, the standard of nothing less than a championship being the goal, they need to do better at quarterback. And the problem is that Mike Tomlin is such a damn good coach that he can win with a bad quarterback situation that he F's up the Steelers, because they're never in a situation where they can land any of the draft's top quarterback prospects. So maybe it could be a good thing if Kenny Pickett gets another shot at it this year. I hope he sucks so we can be bad enough to get Shedeur Sanders next season. I don't care what y'all say. Shedeur Sanders is an NFL quarterback. All right? He definitely would solve the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback problems if he was on the Steelers right now. He will already be better than anybody the Steelers have at QB right now. So for me personally, I'm not really a big fan of Kenny Pickett. I never wanted the dude in the first place. I made several videos doing it. I got a lot of hate, but you guys see the real. You guys can go back and watch it. I was not happy when we took Kenny Pickett. There's nothing special about him. And just bringing in Russell Wilson wouldn't solve the problem either. I really want Justin Fields. I really hope that these rumors are false and the Steelers are trying to work some things out behind the scenes to bring Justin Fields to Pittsburgh. Because Justin Fields, with the upside that he has, he could be a quarterback that if Arthur Smith can put Justin Fields in the right situations to win and utilize his running ability and help him grow a little bit more as a passer with George Pickens and Deontay Johnson on the outside and having a good rushing attack, there's no reason why Pittsburgh couldn't go far in the playoffs with Justin Fields if he's playing at a high level. I'd rather take the gamble with Justin Fields than take a gamble with Kenny Pickett, a guy who doesn't have any outstanding physical traits that could translate to him becoming an elite quarterback. The dude is a good backup, but I don't view him as a good starter. He's a low-end starter. C.J. Stroud in one season already showed us he's a top-five quarterback. Even Anthony Richardson, in a few games that he played this past year, he showed that he has a lot of promise. Even Will Levis. Like, why are the Steelers so committed to wasting their time with Kenny Pickett? We know this franchise has had a lot of great first-round selections, but also a lot of bad ones. Y'all remember Artie Burns? Y'all remember Jarvis Jones? I mean, come on, let's not act like the Steelers just have this great track record of drafting in the first round. They definitely have made some really bad selections over the last couple of years, and Kenny Pickett is one of them. I'm not saying the dude isn't going to be a solid quarterback at all. What I'm saying is that even if Kenny Pickett reaches his ceiling, reaches his full potential, that still isn't good enough for the Steelers to win. And that's why a lot of these teams have failed to be able to win Super Bowls, because they're just okay with winning with good enough. And that's how you get put up in bad situations. That's how you get fired. Look at the New York Giants right now. They overpaid Daniel Jones. For what? Look at the New Orleans Saints. They're giving Derek Carr all this money, and he's not going to be good enough to win them a championship. You need an elite quarterback if you want to win. As a Steelers fan, I'm literally begging the Steelers front office to go out there and get a good quarterback. Stop just wasting our time letting us pay this money for merchandise, pay money for tickets, invest our Sunday afternoons into watching bullshit quarterback play. I'm just sick of it. I just want something different. I want a good quarterback again. Is it that hard to ask for? Why is it that wanting better from the quarterback position, the most important position in the NFL, is just outrageous ass? Kenny Pickett is not that. He's not elite. He's not good enough to win a Super Bowl. So why are we trying to force ourselves to act like he could ever become anything better than that? If he can't lead the Steelers to their 7th Super Bowl, he shouldn't be starting. They should be looking for an upgrade. We still don't know what Kenny Pickett is. And he's going into year 3. I saw CJ Stroud in year 1 become a top 5 quarterback. So you mean to tell me that we still need more time? The better the quarterback, the better he makes the guys calling the plays look. I'm sorry. Yeah, Matt Canada was a bad play caller, but let's not act like he was all up to blame for the Steelers' offensive struggles. I mean, Kenny Pickett's best performance this past season, yeah, he threw for a lot of yards against Cincinnati. Cool. He only put up 16 points. Mason Rudolph looked so much better. The offense looked way more efficient when Mason Rudolph was at quarterback. And he started out as a third string. What does that show you about Kenny Pickett? The Steelers need to stop trying to force themselves to believe that Kenny Pickett is the guy, because he's not. And trying to wait for a guy to reach his potential, do you know where that gets you? It gets you fired. Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. That might change this season if Kenny Pickett is a starting quarterback. Even if Kenny Pickett plays at a solid level, how far can the Steelers truly get with that, despite how good the team is? Because there are other teams in this conference that have not only way better quarterbacks, but also good enough teams that are just as good from a non-quarterback standpoint as the Steelers. The Ravens have good pass rushers. They got a good offensive line. They got good receivers. Everything the Steelers have, the Ravens have. The Bengals could have. The Chiefs are going to have. The Bills are going to have. The difference is not going to be the other positions. It's going to be quarterback. Everybody knows how great the Steelers are. Everybody knows how good T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, and Alex Highsmith, and Joey Porter Jr., and Megan Fitzpatrick are. Everybody knows about Pat Freiermuth and Deontay Johnson and George Pickens. None of that matters if you don't have a good quarterback in the end. You can have a good enough team all you want to. Look at Brock Purdy. Had a great team and still lost, despite the fact that the 49ers were a more talented team on paper. Kenny Pickett is not the guy, bro. Kenny Pickett, I hope he's bad enough to lead us to Shedeur Sanders. And if we pass up on Shedeur Sanders, I'm going to be heated, because we need a quarterback, and I'm willing to invest a throwaway season into getting one. Okay, because we need to stop trying to act like you can win with anything at quarterback in today's NFL when you can't. It's a different world than the 2020s. It's not the 2010s anymore, when you can win with a Nick Foles at quarterback or Joe Flacco. You need elite. Why you think the Cleveland Browns are changing their coaching staff to appease Deshaun Watson? Because they invested so much money into him, they traded for him because they were looking for a lead quarterback. And Deshaun Watson, he may be worse than Joe Flacco. That's why you need a lead quarterback. But look what happened in the playoffs, though. Joe Flacco, he flamed out. That's why you can't win with anybody in the postseason. You need great quarterback play to win. The better the quarterback, the further you go. But the less talented the quarterback is, the more he gets carried by the roster, eventually that gets exposed when he gets forced to have to step up and make plays. Kenny Pickett doesn't do that. He's not a Super Bowl caliber QB. He doesn't move the needle. And I really pray to the football gods that they give the Steelers organization enough common sense to move on from this dude. NFL free agency is just around the corner, and we got a lot of great running backs in this free agency class. And I want to give some potential landing spots for where I think some of the top running backs in free agency are going to land. We're going to start off with Saquon Barkley. Him to the Houston Texans makes so much sense. The run game for Houston was abysmal last year. They had Devin Singletary, who was their best running back on the team. He's a free agent right now. They got a lot of cap space, $70 million to spend. Why not go ahead and bring in Saquon? Not only will he improve your rushing attack, but he also is going to help improve your passing game as well, because he's really good at catching the ball out of the backfield. You also can line him out wide as a wide receiver in certain situations. Saquon Barkley will bring a different element to the Houston Texans offense because they already have some really good pass catchers. You just extended tight end Dalton Schultz. You got Tank Dell coming back fully healthy. You got Nico Collins coming off a breakout season. Adding Saquon Barkley now will be another weapon for CJ Stroud to have. And plus, when you got a young quarterback like CJ, it helps to have a running back who he knows he can always look for in case he needs a check down option when a team wants to send extra guys on the blitz or nobody's getting open. He just needs to get the ball out fast. Saquon Barkley will be a very good pickup for Houston. There's been some concerns about his durability. He's one of those players that when he's healthy, he's one of the best at his position. But the problem is, are you willing to invest a lot of money in the paying a guy like Saquon Barkley when you have those durability concerns? I think for a team like Houston, it's worth it. And plus, it would help Saquon Barkley's durability if you go ahead and you draft another running back or you sign a running back who could be a really good complementary piece of Saquon, so you don't have to overly rely on him throughout the regular season. You can just find a way to preserve him through the regular season, utilize him, but putting him on the pitch count and keep him healthy for when you want to make a deep playoff run. Saquon Barkley would be a great pickup for the Houston Texans, and I think he's going to end up landing in the H-Town. Derrick Henry, I believe he's going to go to Baltimore. There were already rumors saying that the Ravens wanted to trade for him at the trade deadline, and they already had a trade in line for him, but the Tennessee Titans ownership just didn't want to part ways with Derrick Henry. He's on the open market. He's on that career stage now where you're expecting a little bit of regression. But just because he's going to regress still doesn't mean that he won't be a really big addition to the Baltimore Ravens, because since he's a Hall of Fame level player, Hall of Fame level players, they regress at a slower rate than normal players. So Derrick Henry, he still can give you 2-3 more productive seasons. Now, are you going to get a season out of him where he can give you 1,300 yards? No. But in a backfield with Lamar Jackson, and then you're going to have Keaton Mitchell coming back from that season-ending injury, Derrick Henry can still give Baltimore 1,000 yards, probably 12 touchdowns, just with how physical he is. He's still a really imposing back. He's still stiff-arming guys, running guys over. Like, I understand why the Baltimore Ravens wanted to trade for him at the deadline, because if there's anybody who's has seen the full wrath of Derrick Henry at full force, it's them, with all the big highlight moments he's had going against Baltimore over the last couple of years. So Him to the Ravens makes a lot of sense. They got the cap space to do it. They need a running back. Dalvin Cook, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards are all free agents right now. Derrick Henry, yeah, he's 30 years old, but the Ravens can afford to invest in a guy that has this kind of age just because they're nearly there in terms of having a complete roster. So why not just try to stack talent and continue to further make your roster more overpowered? Now, next up, Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard is coming off a down season. After the Cowboys decided to part ways with Ezekiel Elliott, a lot of us were thinking that Tony Pollard was going to have a major impact season for Dallas. And that didn't go how many of us thought it would. You know, he wasn't really the same force when he was the full lead back. He wasn't as explosive. His yards per carry were down. And we didn't see as many explosive runs out of Tony Pollard in 2023 as we saw in the year prior when he bursted onto the scene out of nowhere. For a team like the New York Giants, you can get a guy like Tony Pollard on a pretty reasonable deal. And it could be a prove-it deal. It could be a two-year $6 million, $7 million contract. And he's not Saquon Barkley, but he does have a similar skill set that he can bring to the table. He is a pretty good pass catcher. He is really explosive. And if they can improve that offensive line, this could be one of the best bargain deals that the New York Giants could get on the market. So Tony Pollard, he's still looking to become a lead back. If he doesn't want to be a complimentary back, going to the New York Giants would be the best fit for him. And it doesn't look like they're going to re-sign Saquon. Why would they get Tony Pollard when they could just bring back Saquon? Well, you can get Tony Pollard for a way cheaper deal than what you can get Saquon for. Saquon is at least probably going to get $10 million plus or more. Tony Pollard, he at most will maybe command $7, $6 million a year, which is fairly reasonable for what you can get out of somebody with his skill set at running back. Josh Jacobs, I believe he's going back to Las Vegas. I don't see the Raiders allowing him to play for anybody else. When you think about the heart and soul of the Raiders, it's Josh Jacobs. You may say Max Crosby, that's a good one too, but Josh Jacobs is just so authentic. A lot of players in the locker room really love him. And he's really the silent leader of the team. Like, when he speaks, everybody listens. And I really love when the media talks to Josh Jacobs, because you're always going to get the real. And Antonio Pierce is a real authentic guy. And I would like to believe that he would want to see Josh Jacobs suiting back up next season for the Silver and Black. Josh Jacobs already said that he has no problems coming back to Vegas. There's no hard feelings about the contract situation. He had a down season anyway because of, you know, he was in and out of the lineup due to injuries, and the offensive line still wasn't as good as what it needs to be. But Josh Jacobs still is good enough where you can bring him back. He's still a top 10 running back, and you're definitely going to want to have a guy like Josh Jacobs when you're having rumors of eyeing up for a quarterback in this year's draft. So if you plan on trading up for a quarterback in the draft, it would be in your best interest to make sure that you have a good running back so you're not overly relying on your young QB. And if you get Jaden Daniels, can you imagine the backfield with him and Josh Jacobs? Bring Josh Jacobs back to the Raiders, man. I'm not a Raiders fan, but I would be a little bit surprised if he was playing for anywhere else. DeAndre Swift is probably the most underrated running back on the free agency market right now. He's coming off a really efficient season with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was the best part of the Philadelphia Eagles offensive attack when they started out 10-1. When things started to go left, that's when the Philadelphia Eagles got away from DeAndre Swift. But when they were running the offense through DeAndre, they were really effective. DeAndre Swift going to the Minnesota Vikings, you probably could get him for around $7 million a year. So it could be a cap-friendly deal that still allows you to bring back Kirk Cousins and Jay Jettas. But let's say you move on from Kirk Cousins and you got to go the route of getting a younger option at quarterback. It would help to have a proven running back back there that you know is going to be able to take a little bit of that load off whoever's going to be your replacement at quarterback, which mainly could be you going in a younger direction. DeAndre Swift, not only is he a really effective running back, very good vision, very good after contact, but he also is really good in the passing game. So you can be a good check down option for a young quarterback or a young signal caller. DeAndre Swift, I also would like to see him on the Baltimore Ravens too. That would be really nasty, but I got him going to the Minnesota Vikings. They got a good amount of cap space. Yeah, they got to pay Justin Jefferson, Kirk Cousins potentially, but you still should have some money to be able to get a deal done with DeAndre Swift. These are my landing spots for all of the top free agent running backs. My predictions for where I think the best running backs and free agency are going to land. Leave your predictions in the comment section down below. Arch Manning, part of the Manning family, came out and opted out of the new college football video game that's set to release this summer. And his reasoning for not wanting to be in the game is that he wants to become the starter first before he officially is in the video game. And a lot of people were really negative about this decision, saying that, oh, this was a soft move, he was weak for this. It's not really that big of a deal. It's like, yeah, I would have loved to play with Arch Manning if I decide to build up a dynasty with Texas. But it's not like you still aren't going to be able to somewhat create a player like Arch Manning. Now, the developers said that they're not going to allow players that decide to opt out to be created. They're going to have like a way to keep people from doing that. But you guys already know there's always workarounds for everything. So if somebody wants Arch Manning to be in the game, Arch Manning is going to be in the game and people want to play with him. But it's not this big of a deal where people got to make it seem like, oh, he's just soft and this and that. It's like, he wasn't going to be starting anyway this season. So it's not like anybody was really going to be caring about using him that much anyway. Now, if you're a big Peyton Manning or Eli Manning fan and you really wanted to utilize Arch Manning, then yeah, this probably is a big bummer for you. But I mean, this is just players executing their rights. You know, we give these players the rights to transfer. We give them the rights to make their own decisions in terms of their own career paths. And if a guy wants to opt out of the game, that's just his decision. It's not the end of the world. You know, there are plenty of quarterbacks to play with on this new upcoming video game. If you want to play with Arch Manning, then you probably can find somebody who can get them into the game when they find a way to edit and mod the game and create players that can't be really used in the game. So I don't really get why everybody's just so bent up, out of shape. I'm pretty sure there's also a couple other big name players that are going to decide to opt out of being in the game. And really, you lose more opting out of the game than what you get if you were in the game, because it would increase your brand recognition. It brings more notoriety to players that are trying to build their own personal brands. But for a guy like Arch Manning, who already is pretty popular, he already has a really big NIL deal because of his last name, then it really serves no purpose for him to be in NCAA 14. But if you're somebody who isn't as popular as Arch Manning, take the free copy of the game, take the free money that they give you, and take the free promotion that you're going to get for being able to be a playable person in the game. Because if you play for a school like Georgia Southern, who a lot of people probably don't know about, and people end up utilizing you in dynasty mode and you're a really good player, then people may end up being a little bit interested in following you in real life, you know, off the video game, on social media and whatnot, and help support your brand. So I just feel like anybody who opts out of the college football game is missing out on free marketing, free promotion for themselves, and you just lose more than what you potentially could gain by opting out of the game than if you just choose to opt in and be a playable character in the game. But that's just my thoughts on Arch Manning deciding to opt out of the upcoming EA Sports college football game that's set to release in a couple of months. There's a lot of excitement for Ole Miss going into this year, and they got a lot of hype and momentum right now because they're coming off their first 11-win season in program history. They return a lot of talent on offense. They had a big transfer portal overhaul on defense. Their defense is the only thing that has kept Ole Miss from being able to be a true contender in the SEC. And it looks like they finally have addressed that problem. They got a bunch of great pass rushers, great cornerbacks. You also have Pete Golding going into his second season as defensive coordinator. And plus, when you look at what they have offensively coming back, Jackson Dart, definitely somebody who should be on a lot of people's Heisman watch list because he probably is the best quarterback in the SEC coming back for this season. He had 31 total touchdowns last season. He's a really good thrower of the football, also a really good runner. Yeah, they did lose a really talented running back to Quinshon Judkins to the transfer portal, but Useless Bentley was also pretty good. They got a really good offensive line. You're stacked at receiver. And they've dominated the transfer portal. Like, how well Ole Miss has used the transfer portal is why they're in the position that they're in going into this season to potentially be able to win the SEC. Like, they got Juice Wells out of the portal, fam. Juice Wells was one of the more underrated wide receivers in the country. And he missed a good amount of action last year because of some injuries and a couple of other concerns off the field. But at South Carolina, he definitely was one of the more underrated receivers. And now going to Ole Miss with Lincoln Riley and Jackson Dart, he's probably going to be in the running to possibly win the Biletnikoff Award this season. So there's so much talent that Ole Miss has offensively that as long as their defense can play at a top 50 level, they're going to be able to compete with the Texases and the Georgias of the world. And they got a really easy schedule. Not only are they going to have a really good team going into this season, but they're going to have one of the easiest schedules out of any team in the SEC this year. They should be 4-0 before they even start conference play. They got to go on the road and play Kentucky. By that point, you should be 4-0. And then you play Kentucky. I said on the road, excuse me. They play Kentucky at home. Their toughest road game this year is on the road against LSU. And then after your bye week, you got Oklahoma at home, Arkansas on the road, you got Georgia. Then you get a bye week before going to the Swamp. And then you get your rival Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl, and you should blow them out because they're not going to be that good this year. Ole Miss, with how well they have utilized the transfer portal and mixing that in with bringing in pretty solid recruiting classes, they're not one of those schools that are always going to recruit at a top 10 level, but they always can be around the 15-20-ish range, and you mix that in with bringing in not just veteran guys from the portal, but bringing in freshmen, sophomores that still have a few years to develop, you can build up your roster to be good enough to compete for a national championship. We saw this with Florida State. They had a similar formula to what Lane Kiffin has used down there in Mississippi. So for Ole Miss, there's no reason why they shouldn't be a contender for the SEC title this year. You got a good quarterback. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. And talent-wise, the gap between you, Georgia, and Texas isn't really that wide. I still would say Georgia has a better roster just because of how well they've recruited. They don't need to utilize the transfer portal. But with how crazy you went in the transfer portal, with how hard you went in the portal this last couple of off seasons, I kind of think that the gap shouldn't be wide enough where you can't finish off Georgia at home. You see, the difference is you had to go on the road and play Georgia last year. They got to come to your backyard and play you. And if you truly are as good as a team as what I believe and a lot of people believe you can be this season, you should be able to beat Georgia at home because elite teams in college football, they win at home. They defend home turf. I'm expecting Ole Miss to be a contender, not only for the SEC, but for the national championship. When I release my top 25 rankings this year, I'm probably going to have them around the top 5, no lower than top 7. this truly is a really good team. They don't really have any weaknesses. They just have concerns. The concerns is Pete Golding going to have a top 50 defense? If you can have that, Ole Miss is going to be really scary this season. So this is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you guys enjoyed, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we're a podcast. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Also, send your questions in on Instagram and X if you want them answered on a future episode of the podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at @JTSports_ or at @JTSports_ on X. This is it for this episode. I will see you guys Thursday with another edition of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in, and I will see you guys shortly.